The In Radio Podcast with Dom Chambers.
In Radio. Hello and welcome to the In Radio Podcast. I'm Dom, and I've called this edition of the programme New Beginnings, as I set out on my summer tour of the UK, or actually more England this year, to find some great examples of new independent local radio stations by way of beginnings. And indeed, who is refreshing established ones by way of new beginnings? And as I head to a fine seaside resort in the northeast, I also hear a story of hoped-for beginnings. For now, though, here's a guy. He's got all the clobber on, and he looks like he's got something to say.
Oh, yay! Oh, yay! Oh, yay! My lords, honoured and distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, today we are here to launch the local radio station. Let Radio Nine Springs sound loud and clear.
Be ambitious for our town. Because from this moment, Andover Radio is on the air.
Radio Nine Springs, your friendly new local radio station for Yeovil and South Somerset.
And welcome to the brand new sound of your local radio station for Exmouth and the surrounding area on 106.4.
Hello, my name's Chris Britton.
You may not have realised it yet, but you're a main part of the Radio Scarborough set. Come a little closer. As our number one listener, you should be telling everyone about this great new station, the fabulous music we play, the sport we cover, and the fun we have. That's fun with a capital. Radio Scarborough, as fresh as a sea breeze. I can almost feel the sea spray in my face. Right, that's the last time. You can do your own announcements from now on. And that's not seawater either. I can tell the difference.
Radio Scarborough, your community radio station.
Well, it was worth listening to the podcast just for that. Coming up in the programme, I'm off to Scarborough, as you would have heard there. Back in June, I headed down to Exmouth for Bay FM's relaunch as Exmouth Air. And as summer was doing its best to battle its way into autumn, I headed over to Yeovil for the launch of the long-awaited Radio Nine Springs. That story, by the way, includes pigeons. And that's why I tell my trainees, always give the listener a reason to keep listening. Pigeons, or carrier pigeons to be precise, in the age of multimedia. What's all that about? We'll find out. But before then, and thinking back to a very beautiful spring day, I took a trip over Salisbury Plain.
The In Radio. In Radio. Podcast.
In Radio. For me, as I look back on the summer of 2018, it has been a fantastic time of refreshment, new initiatives, launches and new beginnings. And for me, all that starts back in the springtime when I visited Andover, where, like a lot of people, I've been looking forward to the launch of the new radio station in Andover, which comes under the Love Andover branding, which has been in place for a little while, neatly preempting the launch of the radio station. Now, in line with the common experience I've found up and down the country of how a community broadcaster gets going, it has been the vision of a principal driver, and that person is David Harborough, who I've known for a while, and indeed is known for his background in commercial radio. As he moved into the community sector, he brought sales knowledge with him. But there is more to this story than one person's journey from the commercial into the community sector, as will be apparent from a range of conversations I had on the launch day. And what immediately appeals to me about the whole Love Andover project is the combination of commercial savvy with community development. We'll hear from David a little bit later, and he'll explain how the vision for local radio turned into the Love Andover branding. But as I join many local people for the launch day, on a sunny spring Sunday morning, it is the community development side of the project that I was initially keen to explore.
Love Andover is the new way to spread the love across northwest Hampshire.
Hi, my name is Maurice Sweeney. I'm the Youth and Community Development Director for Love Andover Radio.
Now, I know David well over the years, and I can see that he's going to bring to this project at Andover FM a lot of the savvy that comes from commercial radio. But perhaps you could explain your input into the programme.
I'm a youth and community development worker, so I've been doing this for about just over 25 years. And I look about it's empowering the community. And for example, young people, most young people are powerless at home, powerless in the community and powerless at school. I look at about addressing the imbalance of power, handing it back to them, but actually giving a stakeholder in the community, using the medium of radio, but not just that, we've got a multimedia platform to actually do the stuff that I do in the community and sing and dance about it on the radio.
Can you give me an example of an opportunity that for, say, an unemployed or a neat young person that might be here?
We run a number of programmes here. Streets is one programme, and actually we take young people on a journey. We actually take them on a journey, we give them work experience, introduction to youth work, safeguarding, health and safety, food hygiene. So we actually give them the skills. I do work with a lot of young people who've got drug and alcohol awareness problems. And one of the other parts of this business is we've got Love Skydiving. Being an ex-soldier, if somebody wants to kill themselves, come and kill themselves with me skydiving. I'm not saying do that, by the way. I'm just saying that basically you give people hope. Now, if you give someone hope, aim for the stars, you're going to at least hit the top of the trees. It's about giving people hope and hope for their future. But the only person that can do that is themselves.
I'm Emily. I'm vice chair for the steering group of the radio station and also a volunteer for the Streets Project.
And tell me how you got involved.
So, well, I've worked with Mo for a long time from when I was younger through youth work. So it's just sort of been a journey where I've got involved with things, and then it led to the radio starting up. So Mo said, oh, come and volunteer. You know, we could use you for painting or cleaning. Then we had a meeting, so I got voted on in the meeting to be the chairperson for the steering group. I also heard about the Streets Project through Mo, and then I met Kathy and Janine there, and then that's where I started volunteering doing youth work.
I'd like to find out a little bit more about the opportunities for young people as to why they might get involved with community development, Love Andover, and of course the radio station. Yeah. Could you, from your position, just outline a sort of typical, maybe a couple of what those opportunities might look like?
Yeah, so I know that with the radio station, they are very community orientated, so they're looking to bring people in from like local colleges and things like that, which could potentially help with their exams. Also through the Streets Project, which comes with Andover Radio, there are opportunities for young people to do courses such as introductory to youth work. We do drug and alcohol awareness courses. Once they're then qualified in that, they can then go on and help other people who might need support. We work with like a diverse group of young people, so not one story is the same. We do work with people who suffer with social anxiety as a result of joining the course. They've actually become much more confident in themselves, and that's gone on to help them get jobs and be more confident in regards to writing CVs and things like that. Again, we've had people who have been homeless or had drug problems, and as a result of joining the Streets, they've now got accommodation, they're no longer using substances, and because they're now trained and aware of those substances, they're now actually teaching people who were in the same shoes as them. So it's very relatable. It makes it easier for somebody who is going through a difficult time to be able to maybe be tutored by somebody who's been where they are.
And what about your own story? You're coming over as a kind of very articulate and accomplished young person, but where did it all come from for you?
So I originally was a young person at Fusion, which is a youth group which Mo worked at. I was your typical teenager, really. Bit of a tearaway. No, but having the support of the youth workers there, it makes you believe that you can better yourself. So when you necessarily don't have much support, and then you have guidance there, and they build you up, so you find yourself and you find your confidence, and as a result of that, you can go places, I think.
Now, I know he's in the room with us, but what would you say about Mo and his role and all that?
I think Mo's fabulous. He does a great job as a youth worker, also with the radio as well. What they've achieved in such a short space of time is pretty amazing. I look forward to the journey.
Well, the continuing of the journey.
Yeah.
And here we are on the launch day of Andover Radio. It's a very, very busy kind of party going on here in the studio. We've snuck into a quiet place to have this conversation, but this is a major milestone. What's your feelings about the radio and how it's going to develop?
I think that Andover needs something like this. It needs a sense of community. I think this has brought so many different people together into one room just for the launch of the radio. It also provides opportunities for, you know, like small businesses, if they need access to computing, that will be open to them. So potentially it is benefiting Andover as a community. I think, well, when we first saw the building itself, it was very old and it needed a lot of work done. And it's purely through volunteers in Andover that have given their time as well as working full-time jobs that has all come together the way it has. So I think that's really good.
Well, I was here just a few weeks ago, and although it's a lovely sunny day today, it was all snow and ice then. It was a Sunday afternoon, and I walked in here, and all the carpet tiles were being laid and a bit of decorating going on. David had paint all over his clothing. But I think there was about 8 volunteers working on a miserable late winter's day on a Sunday. That says quite a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's really important, you know, because there's nothing like this in Andover. So when you give Andover something like this and you give the local people an opportunity, I think they grab it with both hands. Like, I know that everybody who has been volunteering has been so excited to see how it turned out today.
Well, Emily, best of luck with everything, and I look forward to coming back in here when perhaps on a quieter day and seeing how it's all going. For the moment though, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Mo, just whilst you're standing here, we've heard from you and about your work. We've heard from Emily and got an idea of how this sort of community development fusion with the radio is going to work. Have you got any kind of projections in your head of how many people you'd like to help through this project or this collection of projects, say, over a year period?
Shapes would probably help about 20 young people, but it's not about them. It's that ripple effect. So it's you help one individual, it's the impact that an individual has around them. So it's about, to me, it's about saving lives, basically, and giving people hope, like I said to you before. And you can only do it one person at a time, and it's done to that one person, and that one person will then go on to impact other people's lives. It's especially if you give them the tools, the qualifications and the experiences to do it.
It's really interesting what you just said. As somebody who fills out a lot of charity applications for funding to the kind of works we do in North East Somerset, the key thing for funding applications is how many people are going to benefit. But what you've articulated just then is the ripple effect. And also, you can't actually say what the benefits are going to be for several years sometimes.
Yeah, and those unexpected outcomes, well, sometimes you can't quantify that. You can't quantify, for example, Emily, I've worked with Emily since she was about 12 years old. Emily's now 20 years old. Now, if I was writing a funding bid 8 years ago, you can't see the unexpected outcomes, the impacts they have on people's lives. And I'm an old youth worker, I'm 52 years old this year, but I'm still doing the job. But it's about the impacts, the unexpected outcomes, the young people that are no longer young people who might be with a wife and kids and say, you used to be my youth worker. Some of the things are worth the weight in gold. You can't put that in the funding bid.
Fantastic stories from both Morris and Emily there. It is that deep and lasting social footprint of what we achieve in grassroots and community broadcasting that is a real driver for myself and so many others who love the UK radio industry and choose to dwell and progress our careers in the licensed community sector. Which I suppose is a timely reminder, this is actually about a radio station. So before we get to how the actual station launched, I wanted to find out a little bit more about how local content is generated.
I'm Richard, I'm the content director for Andover Radio, responsible for the news and all the digital platform.
So in old money, in commercial radio, was that the programme controller?
They'd say that was Dave. Mine's more keeping everybody up to date with events, news, what's happening in the town. We're adding various bits and pieces to the website as well. For example, we've got a job section on there. Again, it's to try and tie all the different bits and pieces together, the community, the business, and just the general public news and things.
When the whole thing is fully functioning then, which obviously it is going to be from this point on because it's just been launched, how would you see that? I mean, on a typical day, great that you've identified a resource to create news content, what's on content, multimedia, so on the website, on social media, and of course on the airways as well. What would a typical day look like for you arriving, and who's going to be joining you, and how's the team going to look?
It will really fluctuate from day to day. We had an awful one, but there was a murder investigation going on at the moment. With that, it was pretty flat out for 2-3 days with news, trying to chase up the police. And then you get to a day like today or yesterday where it's fairly quiet. Weekends generally tend to be a lot quieter.
And how are you resourcing this?
At the moment, it's primarily myself, and we have other people because of I started off a social media platform and a website a few years ago. There are already parts of what we've got that already get contacts from other people. So, for example, if something's happening in town, we'll quite often get notified either by email, Facebook Messenger, email, phone calls, good old-fashioned phone calls. We do tend to rely on the public to keep us up to date with obviously what's going on, because at the end of the day, we're a very small team. We can't be everywhere at the same time.
Are you going to send reporters out? Have you got the resource to do that?
Not at the moment. We are looking for, if anybody wants to volunteer, we are looking for volunteers. Most of the news at the moment is handled by myself.
And you'll give training and everything?
Yes. Yeah.
And how are you intending to work with the established media networks? So around here, I'm just trying to think what BBC is. Is BBC Wiltshire, is it? No. Solent, of course. Yeah. Oh, yes. Shouldn't know that. I used to work there. So obviously you've got the BBC, and Solent's one of the bigger BBC stations as well. I've no doubt you've got local print media options as well. So how will you work with those organisations?
Well, we've actually done quite well with working with the local paper. They've been really, really good on publishing our press releases, and we're looking to try and get closer ties. Everybody that does news wants to get their news out to everybody first, but at the end of the day, we want Andover to have a thriving local newspaper as well. Not everybody's got a radio, not everybody's got the internet, maybe not everybody buys the Andover Advertiser, but you know, it's something that we can help them, they can help us.
I think that's such a positive attitude. I travel around the country and hold conversations like this in all parts of the UK. Now, at Summer Valley FM in North East Somerset, we have a very good relationship with other media, including the BBC and print media. But I do find sometimes, not so much with the BBC, but certainly with traditional print media out there, so it can be a level of hostility. And I think with the right attitude, and that's what we're talking about here, with the right attitude from all parties, you can actually do something that benefits your readership, your listenership, those communities. One shouldn't feel threatened by the other.
Indeed, and you know, it's the idea ultimately is that we want the radio station to be a benefit to the town. Now, being a benefit to the town doesn't involve putting the local paper down. It involves working with the team over there. They're a really good team over there. You know, they have access to information sometimes that we don't. Likewise, we have information that they don't. So the idea is that we can both work together to try and help the town rather than, you know, fighting against each other. Because at that point, nobody wins.
A Sunday morning, 10 a.m., and Iris Anderson is loving the smells, sounds and atmosphere of the Flavours of the World market on Andover High Street. A Sunday morning, 10 a.m., and Sally Price gives 5-year-old Ben a loving kiss as he gets ready for the 2K Junior Park Run at Charlton Sports Fields. And today, there's yet more love in the Andover air. Today, Andover gets its love back. Love Andover is the new way to spread the love across Northwest Hampshire. Find out what's happening. Challenge decision makers. Be ambitious for our town. Because from this moment, Andover Radio is on the air. A new local radio station, powered by love for a special town. Live from studios in Andover High Street, serving town and village, army camp and farm. A radio station for people young and old who live, work and play in Andover. For the very first time, welcome to Andover Radio.
Chris Britton. I'm lead guitarist from the Troggs. I love Andover, I hope you do too. It's been my home for practically all my life. Lots of great things happen in this town, and this is one of them. And it's my pleasure to be the first voice on 95.9 FM Andover Radio, a radio station that loves Andover. It's also my great pleasure to introduce Andover Radio's first song. It's one of ours, it's the Troggs, and it's Love Is All Around.
Hi, I'm Councillor Carl Borchneil, the Mayor of Test Valley.
Nice to see you here today. Here we are at the launch of Andover FM. What do you think that'll mean to this part of the world?
I think the great thing is the community ethos that Love Andover portrays. They're broadcasting a really positive message about Andover, what's here in Andover and what you can do in Andover. Everybody always moans there's nothing to do in Andover. I know for a fact there's loads. I've done over 500 events in my mayoral year and I've scratched the surface. There's loads to do. This radio station will be let people know that it's on. They can decide whether to go. And it's that community ethos, which is absolutely brilliant.
And what is your view then of this fusion of community development work with the media, particularly in the form of radio, though of course this will be a multimedia platform as well?
Well, as a politician and a banker, probably radio or broadcasting comes close behind them in terms of nowadays the enemy because of broadcasting bad news. Having a radio station broadcasting a positive attitude towards the community, I think is fresh, enlightening and absolutely brilliant.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us. And very aptly, he's bounced into the room. He's preparing now to talk. Because, David, you know that any time I hove interview, a microphone isn't far away.
It's like having a wallet on you, except one of them comes out more often.
Don't worry, David, I was only saying good things about you.
All right. Here we are at the launch of Andover Radio. David, you've been the principal driver behind this project to date. So what are your feelings today?
I'm still recovering from that kind of huge amount of nervous energy that you get before launching a station. I'm sure somebody else has mentioned it. It's also unbelievably hot in here today. So we moved into the premises at the back end of January. Getting the premises were probably the most complicated thing that we had to do. And negotiating with solicitors, part of a large insurance firm. And we managed to get the keys at the point in which the place was covered in snow. It's been freezing in here all year, and this week the sun's come out for the first time, only to tell us we didn't need heating in this building. What we really needed is air conditioning, which I'll put on my list of 557,000 other things to do. So we're live now. I'm still on this kind of this nervous energy, as you can probably tell, and now the real work starts.
And how do you see that real work? Because I know you've done a lot of work to date, of course.
Yeah, so there are several things going on here. You know, the radio station is just one part of a... I'm starting to call it a collective. It's not really a collective, but it's a bunch of ideas that we've had which are really about supporting the community as a whole. And that's, you know, trying to support local business, the economy, promotion for the high street, put on more events. Morris has almost certainly mentioned kind of, you know, the community development work that we're piecing together here. And I think almost accidentally we came up with the name Love Andover, which was supposed to be the radio station's strapline. But because we started doing big things like Armed Forces Day last year, it became apparent that saying it was being supported by Andover Radio, which wasn't on air, didn't make sense. So we started using the strapline as the brand for the company. So loveandover.com, the radio station's website, has a little over 14,000 unique users a month at the moment. So before we've launched, we've already built up an online following. We put on several kind of large events, including Armed Forces Day here, under the brand of Love Andover. And I think the Andover marketplace sees the radio station as a part of what Love Andover is. It's not how we started, but we've ended up with that, and I'm actually really happy with the outcome.
Here we are, major milestone reached. What are your initial hopes for how this is going to develop?
Does that involve financial and audience listening figures?
Everything that's really at the top of your list, I suppose. But it's about the wish, it's about the hope.
It's an emotional thing for me, really, because I lived in Andover for a short while working for a commercial station some years ago, and it's a town that I've got a huge amount of affection for, having lived in something like 15 or 18 different locations across the south of the UK, working at lots of radio stations on short-term contracts. So for me personally, really, it's about kind of doing something for this town. It's a town with a lot of love. It's a little bit insular. Anybody's been to Andover or lived in Andover will know that it looks in on itself quite a lot. It has a lot to complain about itself, and there's lots to really shout about and support here. And I do mean economically, socially, you know, there's huge amounts to do. And understanding the power that radio can do and kind of giving social gain, that's to make one small difference in this town is the bit that will really make me happy.
I think, David, what you and the team here have started is going to be a really interesting model for other parts of the country, and I'm looking forward to coming back here to seeing how this fusion of community development with the commercial needs of sustaining an organisation like this and, of course, the media platforms is going to pan out. Looking forward to it.
You can help me write the business plan.
The In Radio. In Radio. Podcast. In
Radio. Well, I suspect that David already has the business plan written, and certainly from what I gleaned on its opening day, I think the Love Andover and its radio project is already making a really compelling story in terms of engagement, impact, and of course, business model. And In Radio Podcast, we'll return to Andover to see how they're getting on a year or so after that launch. And of course, many thanks for their hospitality on that day back in the spring. Now, thinking of hospitality combined with business needs leads me down the road from where I generally dwell in northeast Somerset, going further southwest to Exmouth, where back in June the balloons and the bunting was out and the pasties were baked as Bay FM relaunched as Exmouth Air. I have previously visited their studios, and knowing Andy and the team's work in Exmouth, I figured that at the heart of why the station was rebranding was a business decision. But before we get to it, I asked Andy Green about the background of the community broadcaster that I know very much sees itself as the local independent radio station for that area. So how had it developed over the years leading up to the decision this year to rebrand?
Well, it started in 2006. I thought that at the time, Bay FM was a nice name. It coincided with Ladrin Bay, Lime Bay and Sandy Bay, and we just launched with that name. Exmouth Air was on the list as well, and I always kept looking back at Exmouth Air all the time. But I think what clinched it was buying bayfm.co.uk. I thought, I'm never going to get that domain, and lucky enough I got it. And I think it kind of sealed it for us. We did 7 trial broadcasts with it, and then we got awarded the licence in 2012. We launched in March the 29th, 2013, and had 5 successful years. But people locally, some people just didn't get it. And I am amazed at the amount of people that have come up to me now. We've rebranded the station. The amount of people that have come up to me and said to me how much more sense it makes. And they could never understand why they did Bay FM. But no, Exmouth Air has got a nice ring to it. It kind of brings back the memories of Devon Air without living in the past.
A nice allusion to Devon Air there. There's still, I suspect, missed Devon Air, which many of us hold in affection, perhaps for a time when commercial radio was very much about reflecting the local needs of community, people and audiences. Which, as I have found so many times in presenting this podcast, is very much now the province of community radio. Doesn't, of course, mean to say that commercial radio has become irrelevant. Far from it. It holds fantastic relevancy in the general marketplace of the radio industry in the UK. But it is increasingly down to the community radio licensees to build a local radio offering. And that's exactly what Exmouth Air is all about.
The sound of ELO and Mr. Blue Sky, and a very good morning. Welcome along to the daytime show here on Exmouth Air. Chris Coleman keeping you company between now and 2 o'clock this afternoon. One bit of traffic information for you. The A3.
So, what is Andy hoping to achieve through the rebranding?
I'm hoping that we'll grow from strength to strength. I'm hoping that the name will be recognised as the local station. I'm hoping that we will attract more volunteers. And I'm hoping that it'll bring in some more businesses and we'll get some more businesses on board.
And that leads me nicely to a whole area I'm fascinated by as I travel up and down the country exploring models of grassroots, independent and community radio. And that is those organisations that are principally funded through advertising and sponsorship. How are they going about engaging the business community? What I was keen to know is Andy's take on this.
A lot of businesses do contact us. They'll phone up, they want to talk about advertising. It doesn't happen every day. We have got a sales guy that goes out. He's a part-time sales guy, goes out. I'll occasionally phone round and I'll get lucky. It's difficult. It's not easy. As a lot of stations out there know, you can spend a lot of time with a client, and they'll say yes and tick all the boxes, and then you don't hear from them again for a couple of weeks. And you know, you feel a bit of a pest at the end. I've just had one recently. I've just spent a couple of hours with them going through it, and they were keen as mustard, but I can't seem to get hold of them anymore. But they phoned up, get in touch with us, and or you know, we go out there and speak to them. You know, we keep an eye on the balance sheet. We know what target we've got to hit every month. I'll occasionally meet up with the sales guy, and we'll talk about, you know, what we can do, whether we can polish up the media pack, make the media pack read a lot more easier by simplifying it, or we'll just run through some ideas. But I don't have a sales meeting with it half the time the guy's out working. I could do with another salesperson, really. In radio.
We'll have more from Exmouth Air in a bit. But a community radio licence that drives advertising sales as a principal revenue is only one way of doing it. An alternative approach is to raise revenue through the sale of training services. And that takes us over to Yeovil, which, after many years planning, has finally got its own licensed FM station. And Steve Haig is keen to emphasise its core purpose.
We are, first and foremost, a media training charity with a radio licence.
Now, the links between education, training and community broadcasting is a whole area I'm deeply interested in. After all, I've been running Summer Valley FM for the last 10 years, and that was born out of a classroom project at Summervale School in northeast Somerset. So I'm going to enjoy finding out a little bit more about Radio Nine Springs' approach. But I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, because as we move from Exmouth Air, an established broadcaster which has rebranded, then the story over in Yeovil is about a new radio station. And as always, that first time you flick the Studio 2 live and your target community can hear you for the first time is merely a stepping stone in what will have been a very long project. And often that is caught up with an individual's personal journey. I've often noted that community radio stations that make a really strong start to their licence term is often down to the hard work, vision and drive of one individual and their capacity to draw other people into that vision. That individual behind where Radio Nine Springs came from is Steve Haig. And before I ask him how it all got going, I wanted to find out a little bit more about his personal story.
I speak as someone who began age 14 in hospital radio back in the town where I grew up. And the only reason I was able to develop a career in broadcasting was the local YMCA in the town where I grew up had a hospital radio station, and I got involved in it. My dad had bought me a tape recorder, that's how I began. And then when local radio started, I went along to Radio Leeds, and I was only 19 years old, and they said, do an audition. And I knew how the equipment worked, and I'd done a bit of presenting. They were massively impressed, and they gave me a show. And I was 19 years old, and I introduced the Leeds Top 10 every Monday night. And 19 years old. I know you wouldn't get that opportunity today in local radio. It wouldn't happen. But it would happen in community radio.
Many of us get to a point in life, and certainly this is true. I've found lots of times in community radio, and indeed other broadcast sectors such as BBC and commercial networks as well, where you reach a stage where you want others to benefit from the opportunities that you've enjoyed, or indeed for the opportunities that might be available now that simply weren't around when you're developing your own career. And Steve here is very much establishing that ethos as underwriting how it all got going. And of course, I wanted him to tell that story. By the way, this conversation was happening just after the fantastic launch of Radio Nine Springs. That was what the town crier was all about that I played earlier on in the podcast. And the great and the good of Yeovil were duly gathered on a beautiful late summer's morning, including local pigeon man. Are they still called fanciers, pigeon fanciers? Anyway, we'll find out what he did with his pigeons in a moment. Naturally, as the station's director, Steve was in much demand on the day, but I managed to sidle him off to a place of relative quiet, where I asked him how he'd managed to get Radio Nine Springs off the ground.
Like all projects, it started with a blank sheet of paper and just myself. And I had one or two lucky breakthroughs. The first one was I found John Bradford, who, if anybody has worked in radio, will know John's name. He ran some of the big radio stations, Jazz FM, GWR, Mercia Sound, and has been in radio all his life, and he's one of those people who actually battled to get commercial radio set up way back in the 1970s. John, luckily for me, lived locally, just outside Yeovil, in a place called Martock. I found his number on a website, thinking he could be anywhere in the UK. Turned out he was 5 miles down the road. I went to meet him. We got on very well together. And then the other lucky break was finding an engineer, a technical guy called Adrian Denning, who again lived locally, and that was a pure fluke as far as I was concerned, because again it was a mobile phone number, it could have been anywhere, and he lived in Yeovil. So with the three of us, we got a team together and we started going out and trying to build support. And it's very difficult building support for something which doesn't exist. And people talk the talk about setting up radio stations, but in our case we've made it happen. But nevertheless, getting people to actually buy into this idea takes a lot of persuasion. And luckily I was able to get support through the town council here. And then I went on a roadshow around parish councils and I pitched my ideas to 18 parish councils. And they gave me a little bit of funding, everything from £50 up to £2,000 in one case. And then I was able to go back to the district council and say, look, I've got all this support from the parish councils. I've got some local businesses who've done work for me on the studio. How about you giving me some money as well? And they also gave me some money. Then there was money from the lottery. So we got together a sum of about £40,000 altogether and built the radio station, which covers our capital costs. Now we're free of any debt at all. And now we can concentrate on doing, which is our core purpose of our existence, which is to deliver media training.
Radio Nine Springs is proud to be working in partnership with Yeovil College to deliver workplace training to students studying creative media, to be working in partnership with the Arlington Housing and the Somerset Community Trust to provide young people with training to help them find employment.
You've obviously been on a personal journey where radio has been a huge benefit to you and those opportunities you want to replicate to other people, but what was the thinking behind having this educational opportunity right at the centre of operations?
At Yeovil College, where I do some training and have done, been training there for 5 years now, this year there are more young people signed up to the digital creative production course there than in any previous year. I think the numbers are in the just over 70. So there's 70 young people aged between 16 and 18 desperate to get work experience. Where do they go in Yeovil? Well, there isn't a radio station or a broadcast outlet for them to get that experience, but there is now with Radio Nine Springs. We can provide that for them. And then the slightly older students, the year two level three students, they have what is called industrial placement under T qualifications. And across the academic year, they have to do 41 days out in the workplace. That's proper experience. Well, where do they get that? Up to the time of Radio Nine Springs coming along, there was nowhere for them to go. We are going to do that with the college. And then we're going to work with Wincanton, which is a town of a decent size, about 10 miles away from here. So I've talked to the local councillor. We now are going to talk to the local school. We're going to have a studio in the school at King Arthur's there and involve the children in making radio, audio, whatever, local history or whatever it might be they want to do. It gives a purpose to what we do.
This theme, linking community radio with education, was picked up by many of the speakers that day, including the revered John Radcliffe and this obscure fellow who was lurking nearby with a Radio Today microphone. What a fantastic day, and I'm so pleased to be here. I'm so pleased that Yeovil has a community broadcaster. The impact of community broadcasting is making itself apparent, not only all over the UK, but all over the world. It impacts in two totally different ways, but with strong overlaps between them. One is on the participating individuals. I couldn't think of a better way to start a community radio station than linking it with further education. Education at the heart of community broadcasting is an absolute win, and whatever's happening in the educational landscape, thank you Mr. Gove, it doesn't matter because the links have to stay the same. We also impact on audiences. We are doing things in community radio that they're not doing on the BBC, that they're not doing in commercial radio, and those guys and those networks are doing a fine job, but we're empowering voices that you're not hearing elsewhere. Also speaking that day was Marcus Fish, who is the MP for Yeovil and soon to be releaser of pigeons. But before we get to that, I asked him why is it important for Yeovil to have its own dedicated community broadcaster.
Well, it's important to be able to have a platform for different voices to tell their stories. This is a community that's of tremendous importance. It's very deep. It has all sorts of really interesting things going on. And I think the more that people can communicate with each other, the more that we can work together as a community to get what we want and to entertain each other. And that's part of what life's all about, is having fun. And I think radio is such an important medium, because for those who can't get out of their houses or who can't see or are otherwise incapacitated, it's an incredibly important lifeline. I remember, for example, when my grandfather was in his last months, he very much relied on his radio for his window on the world, and it's incredibly important. So really well done to everybody involved in this tremendously important project.
And what do you think about the links with the young people and the Further Education College?
I think it's a terrific thing, because getting more skills development opportunities into the area is a thing that I've championed ever since becoming an MP. Our college does a fantastic job, and it's great to hear that you're working with them to bring some of these skills forward. I obviously have quite a lot to do these days with the various journalists at national level. I'm going to be on Radio 4 Westminster Hour on Sunday night. And, they all tended to start out in community radio of one kind or another. And it's amazing how far you can go in life if you have those opportunities and you make the most of them.
Thank you very much indeed, Marcus. Now stay here, Marcus, because we've got something very interesting happening now, because we're going to bring in our gentleman who's here with the pigeons today. It's Ian Evans of the Royal Pigeon Racing Association. Now, what's actually going to happen now, Ian?
Well, we've brought along some pigeons from the surrounding villages of Yeovil, from Chard, Wincanton, and other villages. And the idea is that we're going to use these pigeons to actually replicate what happened before the invention of portable radio communication and mobile phones, and actually use these pigeons to communicate the launch of Radio 9 Springs to the surrounding villages.
Okay, so how are we going to actually do that? So you've got the pigeons here. Now, apparently you strap the messages to their legs.
Basically, what we're going to do is replicate what they did in both World Wars. Pigeons were used extensively in the First and Second World War to carry messages and actually save thousands of lives and were vital to the war effort. They used them to carry messages at relatively short distances of a couple of miles to communicate. It was the best form of communicating. And they did this by using small canisters attached to their legs, and they'd actually put the message in the canister, liberate the pigeon, and the pigeon would then find its way home to its pigeon loft, where somebody would wait, take the message off, and relay that back to whoever needed the message, really. And they truly are phenomenal creatures. They not only can they find their way home from places they've never been before, but they can do it at speeds of 50 to 60 miles an hour constantly for 14, 16 hours without stopping. There's no other animal can match their speed endurance.
Brilliant. Well, we're looking forward to it today. Now, there's no helicopters up there, is there? Because I don't want a shower of feathers in a minute. Right, OK, we're moving to the pigeons. There he goes, away, and he's away. See, he's quite happy. So we're once again attaching the capsule. This one's going to Chard. There it goes. Yeah, and he's turned the right way, straight away. They just know where they're going, these things, don't they? Wincanton, this one's going. OK, next one. Froome. Ah, now that's very definitely Froome, isn't it? Isn't it? I just think the one from Wincanton actually fancied the one from Chard. So it was making a bit of a diversionary route around that way. Is this the final one? Oh, Yeovil, this one hasn't got far to go. So don't be surprised if it just comes straight back down again. There we go, ladies and gents. Well done, and well done to Ian and his team. Thank you very much indeed, Ian.
Radio 9 Springs, your friendly new local radio station for Yeovil and South Somerset. You can't get more local.
And no pigeons were actually harmed in the making of this programme, or indeed in that somewhat imaginative way of launching a radio station. Huge fun, and the pigeons seemed quite happy about going about their business. The rest of us enjoyed fine hospitality and good conversation. It wasn't just the dignitaries of Yeovil, although they were there certainly en masse, but there were fellow community broadcasters and associated folk from right across the southwest, all gathered there on that sunny day. And wishing Radio 9 Springs all the luck in the world as they go about that training and building an audience for what they do. And it's very much with the importance of involving young people and children in community media that informs my memory of the fourth station I visited over this summer. What happened was I was invited as a guest by the excellent Mancunian band James, as they were playing Scarborough right down there on the waterfront, and much as they've done since I first met them in a squat in the Hume district of Manchester 30 years ago, they very kindly invited me along, and I was really excited about that because James are at the top of their game, much as they've been every time I've seen them over those decades. So that's why I was heading to Scarborough. The last time I was in Scarborough, I was 12 years old on a school trip, and all I really remember about it was going down to the end of the pier and dropping a penny in one of those machines that was like an early cinematic invention, and photographs flick before your eyes, and you can enjoy what the butler saw in a kind of saucy late Victorian way. That makes me sound really old, but actually 40 years ago is really quite a long time. So I was loving the idea of going to Scarborough, and I thought I'd get there a bit early, and it was a simple Google moment to find out if the Seaside Resort has a community broadcaster, and one leapt out of the computer screen at me, and I knew immediately I wanted to go and visit it. I got in touch with Richard Pearson, who is the managing director of the radio station, and he was very quick to welcome me. And as I arrived at their studio, it was immediately apparent how important young people are to what the radio station has to offer. And I picked up on this when I spoke to Richard a little bit later.
The In Radio Podcast with Dom Chambers.
In Radio. When I arrived at your station earlier, there were two 12-year-olds on air, and they were being supported by yourself, and they welcomed me into the studio, and I sat down and we began an on-air discussion. I love to see young people and children involved with radio, because this is an industry that needs to grow with them as they grow up, if it's to survive. But more importantly than that, even, I would say, is the skills that young people can gain through radio can be enormously complementing to their personal growth and their educational progression. Where are you then with the whole training thing, and how important is it to the ethos of your station?
Oh, very, very important. As you identified, we had two 12-year-olds, Katie and Ben, with us. There's another member of their team who is off watching Leeds United hopefully beat Rotherham today, called Grace, who's part of that team as well. And the idea behind that is they're learning skills which, as you identified, are completely transferable. They can use it in any walk of life. So even if they don't decide to follow a media career, they've got skills that will prove invaluable to them. Now, when I was their age, I couldn't get access to a radio station to learn the sort of thing they're doing. There just weren't any radio stations around that offered that sort of access. So I strongly believe it's one of our major roles to provide access to people, not just young people, but people with learning disabilities, people with special needs, etc., etc., to feel part of the community, and also as a platform to air their voice. I think it's absolutely vital and one of the most important things we do.
Well, so far so good, and as the story of Radio Scarborough starts to unfold, I was really liking what I was hearing. Richard was coming over as a really credible person who has a very firm grasp of the ethos of community broadcasting. So I asked him to tell me a bit more about where Radio Scarborough had come from, and indeed why I wasn't able to pick it up on my FM tuner as I was driving into town.
Radio Scarborough. Seriously addictive music.
It was actually formed in 2012. We didn't start broadcasting till 2013. So we've been, I suppose, in the game for 5 years. And over that time, it's evolved from just a few random programmes here and there to a very full schedule, which I hope reflects everything that's going on in the local community. We very much would like to be on FM. We have, in fact, applied for an FM licence in 2013, which was rejected. We were invited to reapply, or it was a sort of appeal, but the appeal was rejected as well. We've spent the last 5 years really making sure that, as far as we can tell, we tick every box required by Ofcom to grant a community FM licence. But for some reason, unknown to me, we still haven't got one. I'm one of life's optimists. I believe it's a case of not if, but when we get an FM licence. And we're hopeful that there's going to be another round of licensing which covers this area later this year, and we shall definitely be putting an application in.
Well, as I near the end of this particular edition of the programme, I'm going to remind us of our theme, which is all about beginnings, new beginnings, and as we've heard from Richard there, hoped for beginnings, because Radio Scarborough has been around for quite a long time. It is engaging the community and it is engaging an audience. And from what Richard is saying, their capacity to do that will be considerably enhanced through the FM licensing system. And I will give the last word of the programme to Richard in a moment. So we've had beginnings in Andover with Andover Radio, we've had beginnings in Yeovil with Radio Nine Springs, and we've had new beginnings with Exmouth Air, who of all the stations I've profiled in this programme have the longest experience as a licensed community broadcaster. So I'm going to go back to my conversation with Andy Green to ask, how does a local radio station such as Exmouth Air build its audience? What can his experience tell others as they're setting out?
Competitions are the big ones. We get a lot of interaction from the competitions, a lot of regular people listening. But yeah, we get between 200 and 400 texts a day on a good day. Mystery Voice can sometimes reach, you know, as high as 80-odd texts. The morning show now is achieving that kind of number with his quizzes. But a lot of regular listeners engage with the station throughout the day, talking. And all right, there's a lot of the same people, but there are a lot of new people tuning in as well that we're finding, and hopefully a lot more with this new rebrand.
And what's motivating them to get in touch? Because we know, working in radio, that you get a lot of people who love listening to the radio, but they're not necessarily going to engage directly by making a telephone call or even a tweet social media. What do you think is motivating people to get in touch with you? Is it about participation? Is it about the prizes you have on offer, or what?
It's a bit of both, really. They like hearing the names on the radio. They like going for the prizes, the competitions, and they like to win. But they kind of feel like a part of the family, I suppose. And, you know, some of them don't just text in. We've got a couple of regular listeners that will leave a voicemail and we'll play it out over the air. It's quite nice.
Interesting stuff from Andy there. It is worth saying, though, that not every community radio station is fixed on building audiences. They are more about the impact on participating individuals. To my mind, one is enhanced by the development of the other. And irrespective of who I've been working for, BBC, commercial, hospital radio, or community radio, I've never really seen the point of doing radio if nobody's listening. But of the 60-odd community stations I've visited, I don't think I've come across a station that gets more tangible engagement than Exmouth Air if you're looking at it from the point of view of texts. And if you've got any comment about this or anything else that has been raised in this edition of the In Radio podcast, do email me at dom.chambers@radiotoday.com. To close, though, it is back to Radio Scarborough and that conversation with Richard Pearson. What would you say to local decision makers, people with influence, people with power? Why should they support your bid to become a licensed FM station from the point of view of its impact on the community and people who live within it?
Because the community in Scarborough and Scarborough and Whitby, the parliamentary constituency, is unique. To the best of my knowledge, it's the biggest constituency geographically in England, and the county of North Yorkshire is the biggest county in England, and there isn't a single community FM station in that area. And to me, I just don't understand why, because we have a farming community. They are very sparsely dotted around. It's not a particularly highly populated area, and they need communication like more than areas that are heavily populated. But they also have very individual needs as farmers, which they feel, and they've told me this when I've been out in the field, are not being met by network radio, not even by local BBC radio, and certainly not by commercial radio. And the people here, the fishermen, the farmers, they need a voice. They need a way they can communicate with each other, and they need a way they can communicate with the rest of the community. We provide it as best we can. We could provide that a lot better if we had an FM licence. In radio.
I have these conversations all up and down the country, and always included in these conversations is the moment when I ask for an impact story, a story that illustrates the social value of what you're doing as a broadcaster, and that could be the personal impact of, say, skill development or someone's self-esteem by inclusion and might have on an individual. Do you have anything like that for me?
Yeah, I do, and you actually met him. You met a guy called Rob this morning who was looking after the kids as well as me. Rob approached me a year ago. He's a guy with serious learning disabilities. He has to have constant support from various agencies. And he talked to me and he was very nervous. He was very timid. And I thought, this is what we need to do. I did face resistance from some of my colleagues because when Rob started, it was, let's say, lumpy in broadcasting standards. But I felt that given the opportunity and given the care and support, Rob would turn into a decent broadcaster. He's never going to be a top-line broadcaster because he suffers from all sorts of things that prevent that. But the change in that guy in the last 12 months, he's so much more confident now. He will do things like look after the kids. He wouldn't have done that 12 months ago. We had to actually get him to the studio by taxi because he wasn't even confident of getting there under his own steam. He's now one of the most enthusiastic presenters we've got. He chips in with everything. He's a great asset to the station, and the change in him over 12 months, his carers have said it's done him so much good, and we want to keep on doing things like that for people like Rob, because that's a very important part of what we should be doing.
Well, Richard, I can tell you that the last time I came to Scarborough, I was the same age as those two children who welcomed me into your studio when I first arrived here. And from where I'm sitting, 40 years ago is a long time. I very much hope to be coming back here in way lesser time than 40 years. And when I come back, I, of course, hope to be tuning into Radio Scarborough on FM. Meantime, many thanks for welcoming me today.
No problem, Dom. Thanks for coming. Thanks for your time.
I always like to end these podcasts, if I can, on those stories of impact, whether that's impact on trainees and participants of independent grassroots local radio or on the audiences and communities they serve. And thinking of Richard's closing story there, my good wishes to everybody at Radio Scarborough, including Rob mentioned there, and Jez, whose rock show I rather unexpectedly guested on. And we had many tales of a rock and roll nature to swap. But those will have to be stories for another occasion, because this occasion is done and dusted on this outing, and it's nearly time to repair to a local hostelry, where the foaming tankard will be raised as a prelude to fine conversation. All that lies between that and this is my thanks to everybody who's contributed to the In Radio podcast, new and old friends up and down the land, and in particular at Radio Nine Springs in Yeovil, Exmouth Air in Exmouth, Andover Radio in Hampshire, and Radio Scarborough. But I'll catch you back here very soon for more on the In Radio podcast.